Beautiful morning today, isn't it? So nice we can be together again for this final meeting. What's it like to be a rich man without money? I'd been in self-supporting ministries for a few years when this lady came to see me on the campus of one of our institutions. We came into self-supporting ministries with a savings account. And at this time, we still had some. This lady came up to me, and she was from a Scandinavian country. Her husband was an accountant at the institution. He was from America. The family had struggled all the time I ever knew them to kind of make things work. But she came up to me, and I don't know what her motive was, why she picked on me. But she came and she said to me, "Do you know what it's like to live without a penny in reserve?" And she just looked at me in a penetrating way as if I was to reveal my bank account. I felt a bit invaded. I didn't ask for it. But it got me thinking, what is it like to serve in a ministry when you don't have any reserves? Well, that wasn't my problem at the moment. I was an entrepreneur before I was ever even a teenager. I had a paper out when I was 9 years old until I was 15 and left home. I was always building and selling things. I was a mistletoe expert in the neighborhood. So I always had at least pocket change. And when I was married, I had learned to use my hands. I had a little, all the way through college, I supported myself and my family. A little Cleveland Custom Builders, a remodeling service. When I left the seminary, I had a new car and a motorhome and no debt. So I was blessed. So I didn't know what it might be like someday to not have a savings account. But I knew this, and it gave me peace not to worry about it. I knew I was where God called me, and the rest was His problem. I'm not a beggar. I've always found a way to make it myself. But you get in a situation sometimes you have no other choice but to rely on God. And my wife, my family, and I could only focus. We were where we believed God called us. When I became an Adventist, I had made one pledge to the Lord willingly. I've mentioned it to you before. And it's a safe one. If you trust God, it's a scary one, even so. Lord, I'm willing to go wherever you call me. I only ask that you make it clear through your providence that it is your will. That's been our goal. That's been our motto. And it's not a crazy commitment. And it didn't take me a year here and a year there. We've put down roots. We never, when we had a call to a certain location, we never looked left or right. We never hoped for when we could leave. We never thought of leaving till we were called to leave. You can't afford to look around when you've been called to a ministry. You need to focus on what you've been called to do. As I became a new Adventist, and I had my dental technician background, and eventually by working in our hospital, surgical technician background. My mother was a nurse, my sisters became nurses, and as you know, I married a nurse eventually. In the 60s, when I became an Adventist, there were about three categories of what Adventist young people did. Teacher, preacher, doctor. Does that sound familiar? Those are the big three. Well, for me, it was clear, I want to go into medicine. I loved working in OR. I scrubbed on everything from tonsillectomies to appendectomies to C-sections to hysterectomies to heart surgery and brain surgery. I loved working with the surgeons. And I could just picture someday following in their footsteps. We had some godly physicians in our hospital. They were inspiring to me in many different ways. That was my goal. But when Phoebe and I got married, we had one more year for her to finish her nursing degree at Paradise Valley. So I continued to work in surgery. But when she graduated, it was our plan to go back to Andrews University, and I would take pre-medicine. But during that year of her studies, I quietly went through some struggles. In my prayer time with the Lord, we were happily married. We were meeting our budget. I was enjoying my work. We had much to be thankful for. We were helping to pioneer a new church outside of the Paradise Valley area in Imperial Beach. We were busy and happy. But when I prayed, I often didn't have peace. And the problem was that God was reminding me that He might have a different call for me. And I had a hard time accepting that, because I thought I had it figured out. And as I would pray, He would say in my mind, "Yes, medicine can be good. We need medical missionaries. But for you, I have something different." And that was a hard message to hear, because I was so sure I was doing this as an offering. Why would He question it? He said, "If you really want to serve me, I want you to be a minister." Lord, why me? I mean, you know where I just came from. You know my background. Why don't you get these nice Adventist boys that grew up that way? They don't have all this history. Let them be the ministers. That seemed so logical to me. Of course, I'd had a new birth. Of course, the Lord looked at me differently. But I was not understanding it all. I had a lot to learn. 6 months, I allowed this struggle to go on. I didn't give up easily. I argued, I pled. He was so patient. It was like He smiled. He said, "Remember your pledge. It's going to turn out all right." Finally, I had to try a few things to get this thing settled. I decided I would take a piece of paper and I was going to put down all the reasons to go into medicine. And I would be fair and put down the reasons to go into the ministry. I would try to be as objective as possible. So I got the paper out, I put two columns. And with my prejudice, I put medicine first column, ministry second column. And then began to write. I took the easy part and I put why I was interested in medicine. And then I seriously tried to think, what were the reasons that I could go into ministry? I couldn't tell you what they even were today, except that I was surprised that when I got done, I had as many for one as the other. And I didn't expect that. It made me think some more. A few days later, little Miss Abby Dunn, never had married in all her 80 years. I think she was about that old. She'd been a missionary in China. She was one of the last ones to leave China. God had to send a cloud over her ship so they wouldn't be bombed, and the cloud moved with the ship. She had marvelous stories. And when you'd see Abby Dunn, her eyes would sparkle with the love of Jesus. She was a volunteer chaplain there at the hospital in her retirement years. And she said to me one day, we were living near each other. Phoebe and I were living in the hospital apartments, and she was as well. And she said to me, she says, "Brother Cleveland, this is not my business. I know this. But have you ever thought to be, guess what, a minister?" My mouth dropped open. I thought, Miss Dunn, I didn't say anything. I was dumbfounded for a minute. I thought to myself, Miss Dunn, you're talking to someone who works in the operating room. I live in the hospital apartment. My whole life is about it. I'm marrying a nurse, and you ask me this question. I didn't say those things, but my mind did. I just smiled at her, and I said, well, that's interesting. I'll pray about it. It's all she ever said to me, the only time she ever mentioned it. It wasn't too long after that, after a week of prayer for the nurses that I attended, I had to realize this was the Lord's calling, and I accepted that. It was interesting. I thought when the doctors learned at OR that I was changing my mind, I wondered how they'd respond. I wonder if they'd urge me not to do it. It was just the opposite. I was so surprised. I remember one surgeon I often assisted, and he said, I'm so excited to hear that you've decided to go in the ministry. I wanted to go in the ministry, but years ago I had a stuttering problem and I just couldn't cut it. So I took medicine. And another one told me, I can't get up in front, but I love to write. You'll see my articles in the review from time to time. I wanted to serve Jesus this way. Not one of them discouraged me. It was just interesting how God works everything out. When Phoebe and I got to Andrews University and I was enrolled as a theology major, religion major, to prepare for the ministry, as I mentioned to you, I had a wonderful experience. I had good teachers. And I was active in evangelism, both for the campus. I held my first evangelistic campaign in Pawpaw, Michigan. It was not a school assignment. I just had to do it. I had an evangelistic team. I had young people going out. The next year, I held one in South Bend, Indiana, nearby. Again, not for credit, just because. I was on fire to serve the Lord. So I had a great experience. When I finished the seminary, I told you I had kind of a hard time with 6 years of training. It took me a while to get my feet back on the ground with the Lord. It was just a little bit of burnout, but the Lord was there to help me through it. I had two good churches up in the northern Upper Peninsula. There were a lot of Finlanders up there, good, solid people. I had really good Adventist church members, but it was hard going to get a Bible study. It was hard to do evangelism. Finlander people, you know, they have their Apostolic Lutheran Church or the Lutheran Church or the evangelical churches. They weren't too interested in Adventism. And I did the very best I could for the first 2 years I was there. I was there 4 years in that district. But at the end of 2 years, I asked the conference if I could take a short leave of absence and go out to Loma Linda. I had started a master's in public health there while I was still in the seminary. I saved all my electives and I took them at Loma Linda so I could get some health background. I had by this time gotten into reading the Spirit of Prophecy and had read that a minister should be as well trained in how to do medical missionary work and simple natural remedies as he is to preach the gospel. And I thought that meant 50-50, but it just wasn't in the curriculum. So I worked out my electives to be at Loma Linda, and I went out there and started a Master's of Public Health, but I hadn't finished it. And the conference said, okay. And my church has said, okay, we'll wait for you if you'll promise that when you come back, you'll stay 2 more years. And we agreed. We were happy in the Upper Peninsula. By this time, we had 2 more children. We had 4 now. And we headed out to Loma Linda in my motor home and had a tremendous experience in the 70s. Dr. Harding was there. We had Scharfenberg, Dr. Register, who had actually discovered some of the B vitamins, Sanchez. It was a tremendous team of teachers there and very spiritual class. I took nutrition and physiology, things that are important when you're trying to help someone change their lifestyle. So it was such a blessing. When I came back to my 2 churches and I began to do health programs, it transformed our whole image of our church, and we became known in the community as the health people. And we were filling up the bank's training rooms and seminars. I was drawing cholesterol as a pastor. It was unheard of. People back then, in that time, they did not believe that you could reverse cholesterol that at that time. And I didn't know that you could or couldn't, but I knew my cholesterol was low, and I knew people that didn't use dairy products' cholesterol was low, and there had to be some relationship, and it seems to me it would reverse something. And I needed to find someone to back me up with a laboratory, and so a local physician, not an Adventist, in one of my towns, said he was willing to get my blood work processed that I was taking in screening programs, and he told me something very interesting. He said, as a pathologist, when I'm dealing with people who have cancer, and I look at their medical records, and they end up going in the latter stages of their cancers, often on what we might consider a starvation diet, and they cut their calories down and often cut their cholesterol down, their arteries clean up. He says, I've observed that in pathology. And that was ahead of his time. I was so encouraged. I had so many Bible studies, I had to go to Oak Haven and get a self-supporting worker to come help me. That was a blessing. That was one of my connections to self-supporting work. And God blessed us. My last evangelistic campaign was so successful in that little town that when we baptized the choir director from one church and the organ director from another church, the ministerial association defrocked me from the association, because I was very active with the local ministerial association, because we're supposed to reach out to them. And they appealed to me to stop trying to take their members. Well, I didn't do it directly. I said to them, I said, brethren, if you can preach the gospel of Jesus to my church members better than me, help yourself. I have to preach what I know is truth. And if your members are attracted to it, you should be praising the Lord, not criticizing me. And that was the end of the conversation. It wasn't long after that we were ordained to the gospel ministry at camp meeting there in Grand Ledge. It was at that time we began to get calls to go overseas from the General Conference. And as they gave us those calls, we said there's only one hesitation, not a hesitation, there's only one prerequisite. I have four small children. We'll go any place in the world if God makes it clear, but it needs to be family-oriented. I can't just put my family in the middle of some huge, strange country with a foreign language, and I take a departmental position and travel. I said, find us a call where we can be together, and we'll go wherever the Lord calls us. They agreed. And they came back with us to a call to the Amazon to take over one of the Luzerios, big enough that we could live on it, with a crew. And my dental technician skills would be useful, and my surgery skills could be useful, and Phoebe's nursing skills would be useful. My ministerial background could be useful. It seemed to be okay for our family. And we accepted the call. They didn't tell us until quite a bit into the time that we'd already announced to our churches the transition. They didn't say, by the way, it's going to take 6 to 9 months to get your work permits. Brazil takes a long time to get the paperwork. We'll get it for you, but it's going to take time. What should we do in the meantime? We had other calls temporarily, but we thought about it. If we're going to minister in indigenous people along the Amazon, they're not going to want an MPH lecture on nutrition. We need to know more simple natural remedies. While I had a good training at Loma Linda, we weren't really allowed to touch anybody. I wanted to get closer. How could I do this? And I thought of wildwood, and I thought of Yuchi Pines, and the Lord opened the door both places. We ended up choosing to go with the Thrashes, who were pioneering Yuchi Pines at that time. They were very much inclined to mentor other people who were wanting to learn simple natural remedies. So we went there for those 6 months that we were waiting for our visas. During that time, we began to get some strange messages from the Amazon. It was like, don't worry about it, but come anyway. Don't worry about what? come anyway. We wrote the mission president, could you clarify how things are going for our coming there? He never answered. We knew some people on the Amazon. We'd write them, what's going on? Oh, don't worry, come anyway. Well, the Lord in providence had allowed me to serve as a recent graduate of Andrews University. Why they selected me, I don't know. But anyway, I was a member of the Board of Trustees of Andrews University for 2 years as a recent graduate. At that capacity, I knew all the church leaders from the General Conference to the Union Conference. Elder Neil Wilson, Ted's father, was heading to Brazil. And I said to him, would you check this out for us? We don't understand what's happening. He came back a week later and he said, I am sorry to tell you, but things are a mess. The Luzerio you're to take over is not even in existence. They stopped working on it 2 years ago. It's half built, they're out of money, and there's administrative difficulties. Yes, they want you to come to take a departmental position, but I understand your family's needs. We have other calls for you. I'll have vice presidents get a hold of you. It was interesting, over the next few weeks, where we received other calls. Three of them, in fact. Interesting places around the world. But why wasn't even one of them family-oriented? The message never got through. It got lost in a somewhere. And I puzzled as several weeks were going by. We were nearing the end of that 6 months. They're working on visas we're not going to use. What was the Lord doing? Did you ever get in those kind of corners and you're not sure? We didn't panic, but we prayed, Lord, are we being too... Should we be holding out this way? Should we just take the call? Is it the next call we should take is the Lord's call? And I look back at the councils. There wasn't many that touched on this point, but there was counsel that a young family, that a father should be sensitive about the training up of his children. That was part of our ministry. No, I think we were on the right course. And they said it was not a problem. There were plenty of places we could serve and still be together on a campus or something like that. Dr. Thrash came to me. He heard we were close. Dr. Calvin Thrash was a wonderful mentor. He was older than I was. He'd gotten his MPH at Loma Linda about the same time I did. But he was a gentleman. He was a Southern gentleman. Gracious, and his wife, of course, as well. And he said, Brother Cleveland, we're sorry for what's been happening. I don't know if that's the Lord's allowing it, but Agatha and I have been praying. We need an administrator. Our institution's growing rapidly. Our education program is just in its infancy. You're a natural organizer. Would you consider staying here and joining us? Oh, I smiled. It felt good to be invited in a way, but I sort of shook my head, and then I thought, no, I can't do that. I could at least pray about it, but I can't do this. This is not, I didn't train to go into self-supporting ministries. I'm a denominational worker. I've had a great experience in what I've done. I wasn't looking to join them. I was thankful for what they shared with me. So it was beyond me. And yet we were at this unusual situation with the General Conference. So we prayed about it. And as I prayed, the Lord told me, reminded me of something. I loved denominational history. I love history. And he reminded me of something in sort of a prophetic way. He said, if you'd be willing to stay here and use your medical missionary skills to train others, because we need many more medical missionaries, in time, I will use you to do the work like Elder John Burden did for Ellen White when we got Loma Linda, Glendale, Paradise Valley Sanitarium. I didn't really know what that would mean, but I never forgot it. And in time, he did that. When my brethren in the ministry heard that I was leaving the umbrella, the denominational umbrella, I got phone calls. I got letters. It was like I was going into apostasy. They meant well. They warned me I would never have a decent car again. They told me they wouldn't pay us hardly anything. They said I would not have health insurance. And all this was true. They said that leaving the umbrella, my children wouldn't have the advantage of discounts in Adventist education. True. Everything they said had some truth to it. And I couldn't argue with them. But all I knew is that when we asked God to make it clear where we should be, it said Yuchi Pines. And we had to take the call because we believed it was His will. And we were at peace. I had to worry, my kids were too little to worry about academy. They were too little to worry about college. We were too healthy to worry about health insurance. Who doesn't want health insurance if you can have it? Of course. But we had to leave that aside because it wasn't provided. But before us was a work we could identify with. And it was a privilege to be there. We had no debts. We were fortunate for a young family. We had savings, a reasonable amount. And we made a plan. And we said, here's the plan. Because we want to be wise enough to avoid what people have said might happen. And we're going to put aside 5,000 of what we have as the bottom line, and it's our cushion. And we can, time to time, we'll dip into our savings above that when we need them. After all, we're raising four children. And we're going to stretch it, but we'll keep that little reserve. And that just made us feel good. We had a plan. Well, that's how it started. Our children were 3 years old, 4 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old. We loved the work at Yuchi Pines. We helped develop the education program. We saw amazing healing results, too. I remember a denominational leader came one time, and his wife, and he'd had 20 years of migraine headaches that were debilitating to him. And yet he had a large responsibility in the church. We intensely worked on him. Poultices, I mean, we wrapped that poor guy in charcoal and face bandages. And I mean, he slept with them, and we got him on an exercise program. We got him to change his diet, got him to go to bed at a reasonable time, got him drinking water. Many of these things were not being practiced. He left Yuchi Pines 3 weeks later without a migraine after 20 years of them. And I saw him in Russia several years later, and his wife came up and said to me, you know, you never know how much Yuchi Pines changed my husband's life. He's been free ever since. What a testimony. I remember the man from Florida, a multimillionaire that had been to our hospitals. He'd actually been on the board of some of them because of his interest in our work. And he was a large donor, but he got pancreatic cancer. Back then, it was just about very little you could do for it. Our hospitals gave him the best they had available. They tried to help him, but the time came. Eventually, they said, we've done all we can. We feel so bad that we couldn't do so more. But you have 6 weeks, maybe 6 months. And he heard about Yuchi Pines. And he came. And we said to him, we're not a cancer center. Yes, we've had cancer patients here frequently, but we've never claimed to be a cancer center. We have helped some people with cancer, and others we haven't. We have a protocol. We can do fever treatments for you. We can help you with your diet. We can help you with being in the country, in the atmosphere, and we can pray with you. And we will hold you up to God, but we can't promise a cure. But you're welcome to come. Yes, I'm coming. A lot of people have come under that basis. We give a disclaimer. You've got to be honest. And he came. And his blood chemistry improved under the treatments. His energy came back. He got to walking again. And yes, he did eventually die of his cancer 6 years later. 6 years later, he had some quality of life. I remember the Mormon missionary that came into the Better Living Center in downtown Columbus with terrible asthma. They have to come two by two. You know that. His partner came with him, and he stopped at the health food store, and he said, "Do you have anything for asthma? The drugs that I take are just debilitating me." And he was really against taking them. He'd been through this for years with his... He was struggling in his mission. Dr. Agatha says, "You could take this herb, where's Lee? And do this and this." But he said, "Brent, we can do one better." He says, "Because you're a missionary, we have a policy at Yuchi Pines that we take missionaries without charge. You need to come to Yuchi Pines." And his partner looked at him like, "I don't think so." And they went aside and talked and came back and said, We'll come. And it was right then that I was working with the Thrashes and taking care of patients. And I was assigned Brent. And I gave him hydrotherapy treatments. And that night, he slept all night long. The next day, he was out walking and he could breathe more freely. Of course, we gave him several hydros through the day. He was making good progress until the bishop called and found out he was there. And the bishop was angry. And he says, "Brent, you have no business being at that Adventist place. I want you out of there in an hour." And he wasn't sympathetic. He says, "You know what to take for your asthma. And you're tying up this other missionary. You need to get back to work." It wasn't handled very nicely. He left. And there's a lot more I could tell you to the story. But by the time he finished his missionary endeavor after 2 years, and he returned back to California, to home, he was no longer really a Mormon in his heart. Because he hadn't been understood and he felt abused, really, over this situation. I had a trip to California for a seminar, and I thought I would try to look him up, and I did. And I learned he wasn't even going to church. And I said, "Brent, you ought to come back to mission to Yuchi Pines. Take our medical missionary course." He said, "I'd like to. I don't have a penny. I'm living here at home." I said, "Can I talk to your parents?" I said, "You know, I think your parents might be open to it." I'd never met them. But I knew they couldn't be happy that their missionary son wasn't even going to church. So I reasoned with them. I said, "I know you're disappointed about Brent. But," I said, "your son has a natural interest in simple natural remedies, and we learned that it worked for him. Why don't you sponsor him to come back to Yuchi Pines and take our course? I'm flying back in 3 days. He can fly with me. Please pray about it." 3 days later, Brent was on the plane, and they sponsored him to come to Yuchi Pines. I tell you, we have so many experiences in this kind of ministry. 4 years went by at Yuchi Pines very quickly. At the end of 4 years, I wasn't looking left or right. I got a call to come to Mount Missionary Institute up in New Hampshire, a new institution that had been pioneered from the Wildwood group to bring work back to the East into New England. I said no. After praying, I said no. "We're busy here. We love it here. My family's happy here." 2 weeks later, they called again. "Would you reconsider? We need you here. We need someone." The man who's pioneered this institution's having some health challenges. He needs an assistant. "Please pray about it." I said, "I'll pray again. I'm prayed for 2 weeks. I couldn't get peace. I said no. 2 weeks later, I got another phone call from a mountain missionary. We're having a board meeting. We bought a ticket for you. Would you please come and at least meet with the board? I mean, talk about twisting somebody's arm. How would you like that, Cody? And I didn't like that at first, but I said, I'm going to pray. And I thought, well, if it's that bad, maybe I could at least go there and look. My wife was in agreement. So I flew up there. And within about 24 hours of walking that little campus on the beautiful mountain, it was mountain missionary on a mountain. It was an old mansion that had been beautifully built and some nice homes around it. It was a beautiful place overlooking Mount Monadnock. And the Lord gave me peace that it was His calling. I didn't really want to leave Yuchi Pines, but I felt the call. I went back and talked to the Thrashers and my executive committee. I'd been mentoring a young man to work with me at Yuchi Pines, and they voted that he could take over. And it's always good to train other people, period. Just mentor people whenever you can. And so we went to Mountain Missionary. It was the hardest institution I was ever connected to. You don't easily shepherd New Englanders. I was a Westerner. And besides that, I really don't know that I was ready to lead the institution. In fact, I didn't go there to lead the institution, but only weeks or a month or two after I got there, the leaders' emphysema, which was aggravated by the Country Life natural food warehouse business he had helped pioneer, and his wife, the flour and the dust was getting to him, and I almost thought he would die one night when I was trying to help him with some treatments. And he had to leave and go back to Wildwood. Hoped to come back soon, but it didn't happen. And eventually I was voted the president of that institution, and I served there 4 more years. But it wasn't easy. I wasn't really trained to work with New Englanders and whatever else I needed and the challenges. It was at Mountain Missionary it was broke when I got there, trying to survive and the harsh winters. We had plenty of wood, but you had to get out and cut it and stack it and dry it and split it. And we did all that, but we didn't have water. We kept running out of water. The wells, they had a history of well problems. And I thought, what are we going to do? We've got to have water. And so I had an idea to go to the Bible, and I looked for all the texts in the Bible that talked about the importance of water. And I called the campus together, and in our chapels we began to pray, and we claimed the promise to have water. And we made it a matter of prayer and fasting until we came up with a plan that made sense of how to approach the geological structure of Mountain Missionary's mountain, and got some counsel from surveyors and chose a place to drill the well. And God gave us water in abundance, and it's never stopped flowing since then. But while that happened, and I had to figure out how to pay for it, and God blessed, we ran out of money, personally. It was a new day. I mean, it wasn't that we reached the 5,000 level. We had quietly used it up also. And Phoebe and I had never had a sit-down talk and said, oh, we're at that level. There's only 5,000 left. We were too busy by this time to even think about it, but little by little, it went down until it was gone. We never missed a heartbeat. We were where God had called us. It was then that I was at a meeting at Wildwood, and we got a call. Well, we were praying together in the upper room of Haskell Hall with other leaders of an annual leaders' retreat. Elder Frazee was leading out, And as we started to kneel to pray, about 15 or so of us, leaders of institutions, someone said, please have special prayer for Riverside Farm in Africa. They've done well for 15 years. It's a premier missionary institute training young people from all over those African countries, and yet we don't have leadership now. They've finished their 10 or 15 years. They've come back to the States, and they haven't replaced them all. And the people trying to do it now are older, and they're begging for help. Let's pray about it. And I thought, well, that's a worthy prayer. Let's pray. And so we knelt and prayed. And as we finished the prayer, Dr. Hansen, with tears in his eyes, before we could get off our knees, said, while we were praying, brethren, I was impressed that the Lord would be pleased if the Clevelands would accept the call to Africa. I didn't know there were two Clevelands in the room at the time. There had to be. It couldn't be me. I mean, I didn't grow up an Adventist, so I didn't know about mission stories like some of you do. Phoebe did. I mean, Africa was the mission field. But for me, send me to London, but not Africa. It was a tough call. I wasn't looking for a call. The brethren looked at me. I said, fellas, I've never even dreamed of this, but I'll pray about it. I called Phoebe that night. She's a childbirth educator and not a professional midwife, but a nurse, and she did midwifery as well. I said, Phoebe, teasing a bit, how would you like to move to a country where you could deliver all the babies you could ever dream of? She said, I'm ready. Let's go. I said, well, wait a minute. I'm just telling you about it. I mean, we got a call to go to Zambia, to Riverside. We knew about Riverside. It had a wonderful reputation, doing a marvelous work. But how to put it all together? Would our family want to move? Yes, they did, actually. They were willing. How to raise the money? Yes, they'd pay our tickets over there, but they needed supplies. It had been many years since they'd had a container with anything. And besides that, they had a vision to build a boat that could go up the Kafue River. We were on the Kafue River, and it was a highway through to many tribes up in throughout Zambia. And they wanted to have a floating clinic. And, of course, I loved the idea, but you couldn't even get fiberglass very easily in Zambia. You'd have to import it from South Africa, and it's very expensive. So I'd have to bring everything with me in a container, the engine, the steering wheel, and all the parts, and build that thing, and launch it, and pay for it. But God opened all the doors, and everything happened. And we went to Zambia, and the Lord blessed. We had a wonderful experience there. When we were at Mountain Missionary, we had a dental need. One of our dental needs was braces for our teenagers. Our kids were just getting into teenage years. We had no idea how we could do it, so we didn't even try. But it was there in our mind. One day, shortly after we were verbalizing this between husband and wife, we got a phone call. I didn't even know there was an Adventist orthodontist in the New England area. And he said, I've been impressed to call. If any of your young people need orthodontic work, I want you to know I'm prepared to do it for free. A rich man without money. And this happened to us over and over and over again. Oh, but now they had braces on and we're leaving for Zambia. We didn't know what we were going to do. Probably just have to take them off. It wasn't settled in our mind. We were leaving in just a couple of weeks. We were sorting so many things out. There were two people. I needed more staff. And as I prayed about it, God impressed me of two families. And I knew once He said it, they were the right ones. And I knew once He said it, they would say yes, even though I would not push them to say yes. And they said yes, after they prayed about it. The whole thing fit together. We were packing the container. We were packing our things. And I got a phone call It was the orthodontist. Oh, I needed to call you anyway. He says, no, you don't need to call me. I said, yes, I do. You know we're going to Zambia. Yes, I know you're going to Zambia. Well, we've got to do something about these wires. I know you do. He says, don't worry about it. We're going to Zimbabwe. We just accepted the call ourselves. We're moving to Africa too. I'll finish the work there in Africa. And he did. Can you put that together? This is God, a rich man without money. Over and over again. We had 3 years in Zambia. If you want a little side lesson, it's better to go to the mission field, especially a foreign culture, when your kids are babies, because then it's natural to them. I went with teenagers, and we liked it, we loved it, but it wasn't home to them. So they integrated to a point. But when it came time that mom's home school was getting a little, they wanted a little bit more maybe at the latter part of their academy age, it was reasonable. They'd like to go to the academy maybe for a junior year, senior year. That was reasonable. But to come clear back to America to send them, the day we put Marie on the plane to go to Castle Valley, now Daystar Academy in Utah, at 17, I tell you, that was a hard day for mom and dad, for her to fly back and without family support here. But there was providences, and the Lord opened the door for her to go there. It had been the original plan even before we got the call to Zambia, but then she waited a year and a half so she could come with us. We had a good family, good children. But Craig would be next, and then Michelle, and then Marcia. So when our 3 years were up, and I had a strong team and a great assistant who had accepted the call to go with us, but he came with babies, we turned it over to him, and we came back permanent return on our first furlough 3 years later. We joined Wildwood, and I became vice president, first administrator, got the program, helped the program for a while, then became vice president for overseas, and there God began to fulfill what he told me at the beginning to help establish other institutions. I'd become the chairman of the board for a project in Norway for a number of years, and we ended up, like most people and institutions are like people, with some problems. And I had to go there frequently, 1 year in particular. I mean, every 3 or 4 months. But gradually, we pulled together, we dealt with the personnel problems, people were willing to keep trying. And I was hoping to get back to once a year going to Norway. But I'd scheduled a board meeting, and I was going to Atlanta, and I'm arguing with myself that I don't have time to go, I don't want to go, I got my ticket in my hand, I'm obviously going to go. You ever do that kind of stuff? You know, you just fuss, but you do it anyway. And I said to myself as I got to Atlanta, it's just a routine board meeting. I wished I could have got out of it. And the Lord said right to my mind, in my work, there are no routine board meetings. I said, okay, Lord, I heard you. I got to Norway a couple days before the board. I met with the executive committee. I was talking with them, and I said, how are things going? Update me. He said, things are much better now. Things are going smoothly. The board meeting's just going to be routine. They used the same words, innocently. I told them my impression at Atlanta. They said, okay. Okay. It was the fall of 1989. Do you know what happened then? The night before our board meeting, the Berlin Wall fell when we were sitting right there. 2 nights before the board meeting. And that night, that day after it had fallen, and the Eastern Europeans were flooding across into Western Europe for the first time in decades, the papers and all the information, it was such an exciting, electric moment. That night, the Lord kept impressing me that every sanitarium, whenever possible, should also have a training school. Fredheim had been operating a beautiful health retreat for a number of years and an agricultural program, but never the medical missionary program. And I thought, wouldn't this be a perfect time to be able to bring Eastern European Adventists who have never had the opportunity for a Christian education, bring them to our schools, bring us to a school here and train them and send them back all throughout the former Soviet Union. I could hardly sleep that night. The next morning when the board was due to meet, I was coming to the meeting place and I saw the president of the institution coming toward me, and I was going to give him I just was ready to bubble over to him what I'd been thinking about. And as I walked up to him, I noticed that he had the same problem. He looked like he was wanting to bubble over about something. And as we compared notes, guess what? He had the same thought. The same thought. And we took it to the board. I mean, we were flowing with excitement. They readily accepted it with just one condition: if I'd come and help start it. I thought, oh, I would love to, but I have a position back home. Phoebe's director of nurses. But this is of God. And if I know Wildwood, they will do what they can to make it happen because they have a missionary spirit. I'll go back and talk to them. I'm willing to come if they'll give me a leave for a year, and I'll put a team together. I went back and told them, and they said, we will work it out. Go move forward. I knew of a doctor and his wife from Germany finishing their training at UC Pines. I knew a nurse that was finishing training at UC from Austria. I went to see them. I knew before I asked them, God would help them to say yes. I don't know if you've been through this kind of experience. I didn't try to tell them I knew God would tell them yes. I'm more reserved than that. But I knew in my heart that God was leading. We put together a premier team to start the European Bible School for Health and Agriculture, and hundreds of young people went through that training program from all over Eastern Europe and Western Europe as well, and some from America. And as we trained them, I would go out into the field to Russia and Ukraine and Bulgaria and Moldova and Albania and all kinds of places to prepare for them to be able to lead. Can I have mercy? I'm getting the time up. Can you vote 10 minutes? How many will vote 10 minutes? Okay, mercy. And I would try to go to these countries and meet the leaders, the church leaders, because when our students finished at Norway, they had to leave the country. And we were trying to open the door so that when they came back, they weren't treated as offshoots because the leaders wouldn't know who European Bible School was. I said, listen, we're willing to sponsor these young people. Well, if you know, instead of looking at them as Bible workers, treat them like a Bible worker, medical missionary, but they can come back and we'll help them. And the ones that have leadership ability, our goal eventually is to make lifestyle centers. And God helped all of that fit together. And our young people went back to Romania and became leaders in the conference with health departments. And in Russia, the division leader is currently one of our former students. And God just blesses these kinds of programs. And He blesses our personal needs as well. I remember when we were trying to get to Norway to start this school, it was summertime and our kids were home. Marie had gotten married, but the younger three were there. Two were starting college and one was still in academy. And Phoebe says, I'm not going, though, if the kids can't come for the summer. It's okay during the school year. They'll be in school, boarding school. Okay, we can handle that. But they've got to come. I said, Phoebe, they'll pay our way over, but I can't ask them to pay for the kids for the summer. I'm just trying to be reasonable, you know? I knew she was right. Of course I want them to come. But mechanically, how to work it out? But it was our problem. I couldn't say to Norway, you have to have the whole family. At least I didn't think so. So we decided to do something we'd never done before. We sent out a newsletter to all our friends and family. We'd never bugged people for an offering. Clevelands don't need to do that. We usually find a way. But this time we needed help. We sent it out prayerfully. And in a few weeks' time, we just needed tickets, three tickets. That's all we needed. A couple thousand dollars might get it. We got $150 from all sources. It was pretty discouraging. But it had to happen. We ended up taking them on airplanes with no money. Amen? We had a man call us. He said, I have excess frequent flyer miles. Well, back then, you couldn't transfer them legally. And I didn't want to get into some fishy thing that wasn't appropriate. You were not allowed to trade them. Maybe to a wife, but to another person. But Continental Airlines had just made a new policy that allowed for it, and he had that kind of mileage. And we took our three children to Norway for no money. After we were there, some months went by. Craig and Michelle were going to Southern, but living at home at Wildwood, domestic problems developed. They were best friends normally, but without mom and dad around, who's going to do the laundry? Who's going to cook the meal? Who should drive the car? Little things began to happen. Phone calls began to come to Norway. And it wasn't long, and mom said, I'm going home. That was hard for me. Yes, she needed to. I didn't question that. But I didn't want to be there alone either. So we didn't have a ticket for her to go home on. We had a return ticket, but it was like 6 months, seven, 8 months away. And it was not normal to change dates. I had to try. I called the airline. I said, is there any way? We have a family need. My wife needs to go back early. Can you change that ticket? And they told me plainly, we don't do that. I tried a little harder. And they said, sir, we don't generally do that. What was the new word? You guys have been there, haven't you? I said, ma'am, may I speak to your supervisor? And this was calling Boston at the time from Norway. It was expensive. It took forever to get him. I said, sir, here's my situation. Is there some way you can help us? He said, just a moment. It took him forever, whatever he did, at my dollar. Finally, he came back and he said, we have decided to allow this. I had to get it in the computer. Your wife can leave tomorrow from Oslo. And everything's arranged. We won't charge you anything for changing it. I took her to Oslo the next morning to board the plane, and the computers were down. They had no record of her flight. And we're standing there, and the plane's leaving in 30 minutes. She's going home. She was going to go home, whether they knew it or not. She's a mother bear, like the ones up in Alaska when you turn them on. I did have at least a reference number, so they could at least know that it fit the airline, but they never could get the computer going. Somehow they gave her a temporary boarding pass to get to London. At London, she'd get one from London to New York, New York to Atlanta. She got to London on her boarding pass, no ticket, boarding pass, an improvised one, and went and stood in line to get customer service to get the real ticket issued and boarding passes. And I don't know what happened. Their computers were working, but they couldn't find her reservation either. But they recognized she had the number, and they recognized Oslo had recognized the letter come that far, and after a while, they issued her two boarding passes. And Phoebe said to them, well, when I get to New York, should I go to customer service and get the ticket? And the man said, Madam, the fewer people you talk to, the better. And she went from Oslo to London to New York to Atlanta without ever having an official ticket and no money. Now I'm stuck in Norway alone. I'm a big boy, I can get by, okay, but I love my wife and I love my family. Do you know what God did for no money? He flew me 6 times that year back to America. I didn't ask for it. 6 times I never paid a penny. God is a big God, and I'm a rich man without money. You wonder how that happened. I'll tell you briefly. Lifestyle Center of America in Oklahoma was trying to put itself together. Dr. Neil Nedley knew me. I'd helped him. If you look at Proof Positive, my name's in there as the original person helping him with it. And he said, I'd like you to invite Chuck Cleveland to come as a consultant. They had plenty of money. And they flew me over every month to meet with their board while they were trying to plan how to get that institution off the ground. And it meant I stopped by and was with my family briefly from time to time. And it was timely, I can tell you. Well, if I had a little longer, like the herbalist this morning, we could go on 3 more hours too. Everything I ever needed, my children's education, they went to the academy of their choice, the college of their choice, and with God's help, we never were beggars, but we always found a way to meet our own stewardship. All God's biddings are enabling. Christ Object Lessons 3:3:3. If God calls you to do something, He will help you to make it happen. You need to trust Him, be willing to go where He leads, and don't worry, He doesn't throw away His workers when they get older. Today, we're no longer in an institution. We haven't been for quite a while. We have our own home about 1 hour out of Chattanooga. When we decided to start Health Education Resources, we never realized it would become a full-time ministry. But I'm now able to work from my home, through the internet. Our products go all over the world. And it's not a huge job to do, and so I'm able to travel and help other institutions. That's why I serve on a number of boards. But it's been a marvelous experience. When we decided we lived in a motorhome for 3 years and just did seminars all over the country, training people how to do health expos. And then the time came, we felt we needed to get our feet on the ground, and because of the days we're living in, we need to practice what we believed, and that's country living. We got a 4-acre property in the country, cleared the land, and bought the 4 acres, and that's all the money we had. But today, we were able to borrow some money temporarily and start the home, and friends helped me build it, and we put it up together, and it's a story of itself. Every single board in there has a story behind it, how it got there and paid for, and my solar, and our independence, and our fruit trees, and our greenhouse, and, you know, I'm a little farmer, and a medical missionary, and head elder, and a board member, and a traveler. I don't know how we do it. It's a good thing I'm young, or I wouldn't keep up with it. But I'm only telling you this, and by the way, we owe no man anything. And I'm only telling you this because when you get older, you worry about these things, or you can. I'm here to tell you, God does not throw away His older workers when He doesn't need them anymore. Because He never stops needing us anymore anyway. And He's always there to help us. May God be with you and guide you. When God calls you for something outside of your comfort zone, all you need to know, you know, don't jump at every call, any call, but be willing to go where He calls you and only hold Him accountable to make it clear providentially that it's His leading and you're safe in Jesus. If you'll follow that, you'll be a rich man too. without money.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.